Chris Lees presented you this morning with some anecdotes and stories about enforcement and landlords at local level. What I'm going to do is give you some anecdotes and stories about secondary legislation and statutory instruments, and I leave you to decide which is the more interesting at the end of the day. I want to concentrate on that to some extent because the report makes a number of recommendations and suggestions for action, and certainly it's fairly easy to see when you look at those reports of actions. A lot of them do in fact relate to that area of legislation which I think I can characterise by the stuff that has to go through Parliament after you think things have gone through Parliament. And what I mean by that is that we have, for example, the Energy Act 2011 in place, and a number of those, me included, who were on the bill as it went through Parliament thought that we had achieved in that a number of clauses which related to the whole question of standards in rented accommodation, minimum standards, and how those might be improved, but actually we were wrong. And when you look at the secondary legislation that needs to go through, it is apparent in the Energy Act 2011 that it does indeed say by 2018 landlords should improve their properties to EPC band E or face the prospect that they will in principle be unlettable. And obviously that begs the question of enforcement and knowing where the landlords are and how that's going to be done. But nevertheless, that is on the face of the Energy Act 2011. But only a proportion of those landlords that are subject to that piece of legislation actually really are subject to that piece of legislation, because it actually talks about effectively the letting of a whole property. And it didn't appear to be the intention of the government at the time that that should be the wording of the legislation, but that is what it is. And what that means is that if you are letting an HMO and you're letting parts of that building at different times, then effectively you're exempt from the provisions of that that legislation. And the second observation relating to secondary legislation and landlords is that the bad news is that actually the small landlords tend not to know about the legislation, and that if they are informed about the legislation, then it's possible they might do something about it. The other piece of bad news is the large landlords do know about the legislation, but they also know how to get around it. And I would predict that certainly when the other part of the process of secondary legislation, which is that government has to get round to actually producing consultations and the implementation of the statutory instruments that give substance to the bit that's on the main part of the legislation, then it might be quite possible that we would find that certainly a number of larger properties might turn out to be let in parts rather than wholes over the period, if people are going about trying to implement the legislation by 2018. And the other part of that is that, indeed, as the report this morning notes, the consultations which precede the passing of the secondary legislation are underway. Now, personally, I think that's something of a disgrace, in as much as the legislation itself was passed in 2011. Here we are, the end of 2014, we're only just now getting round to the consultation about the secondary legislation, which might give rise to something which might happen by 2018, which obviously local authorities in particular will have to get geared up to enforce, and we still don't know what's actually going to be in the substance of the secondary legislation, and nor do we particularly as far as the other part of that legislation, which is the tenant's right to request repairs in 2016. So part of the action, I think, that needs to be undertaken is to just get government to make sure it does what it says it's doing in legislation in the first place by means of the secondary legislation that follows from it. I've been trying to pursue a bill, a small presentation, private bill, through the House to plug that particular gap, which can be done by some relatively minor wording in the main legislation. But I do think it's essential that we get that particular gap plugged, so that when we're talking about energy efficiency in properties, then it does really apply to all let properties and not just to some. Second piece of secondary legislation that's had quite a hand in this area of property update is the provisions and the changes that have taken place with the energy company obligation. And indeed the report mentions the fact that, essentially the Green Deal hasn't really worked in terms of what its original intentions looked like and how what take-up has also looked like. And certainly the energy company obligation, although that's, you might say that's worked a little better in terms of some of its original intentions, has by order effectively been completely changed and chopped, so that instead of concentrating a fair amount of money in uprating, particularly in terms of quite expensive changes such as solid wall insulation, over the early period it's been lengthened in its period of provision and halved in its terms of finance, all essentially by secondary order and not by any primary legislation changes. One of the major problems, however, as far as the energy company obligation is concerned, is contained exactly in the title, and that is that it's an obligation on energy companies, and energy companies then have to go and effectively run around and, following the obligation, find who it is who is going to be the subject of the money that's going in to discharging the obligation. And although there have been some very imaginative ways of partnering with local authorities in particular to make the maximum use of that obligation by those energy companies, I would suggest that actually isn't by any means the best way to go about this particular process. And I do think that the next phase of the energy company obligation, or the son or daughter of energy company obligation, needs to be, yes, based on an obligation for energy companies, but actually an obligation which effectively puts the seeking out and the doing in the hands of local authorities and social partners. And so I think there's a prospect that over the next period that will happen, and that the way forward, in addition to getting landlords clear about the breadth of their obligation, will be that local authorities will have the opportunity to include landlords in essentially area-based uplifts, which can improve large numbers of properties at the same time, has a very substantial element of efficiency savings by numbers carried out in the area. I did some while ago go and see a scheme actually carried out under the CESP provisions, which existed prior to ECO, and I'm sorry I'm spraying acronyms around, the CESP program essentially allowed area-based improvements, and one particular one I did indeed go to see in Walsall, was the improvement of an entire social landlord estate, but only about 50% of the properties actually were in the ownership of the social landlord. They were all externally clad. The average cost of the cladding came to about £4,500 per property. Would have been about £9,000-£10,000 if they'd been done individually. But as a result of the programme, a large number of properties on the estate were offered the opportunity to come into the programme at the same cost. And a large number of private landlords then signed up, firstly because of the cost, and secondly because actually the properties would have looked rather odd if they were the only property in the whole area that hadn't actually been uplifted. Roughly double the properties that were in the original programme were eventually done as a result of the area uplift, and roughly half of those properties were private landlord properties and not social landlord properties as a result. And I thought that was a very good demonstration of what I think is eminently possible should ECO be changed round to actually putting the obligation as a combined obligation at local authority level and ECO level. And again, that has to be done by secondary legislation rather than primary legislation. Final thing I would reflect on the report is indeed this question of tenants' rights to repairs and incentives. We have, as it were, the antidote to one of the problems that relates to that request to undertake repairs presently in theory going through Parliament, and that is indeed, as you've heard mentioned, the retaliatory eviction bill, which was talked out recently in the House. I can give you the name of the MP who talked it out and his constituency and his telephone number if you see me afterwards, but unfortunately that has stalled at its second reading, but it seems to me that's an essential part of the plugging process that needs to be underdone in order to make that possible. But I also think, and indeed the report reflects on this, that actually the whole question of the relationship of the tenant to the landlord in terms of length of tenancy is an absolutely essential component in the longer term, and that actually if we are in a regime where certainly the landlord, as we heard, knows that they can go and get another tenant the next morning if someone complains, and that tenant will be in a very insecure position as far as their tenancy is concerned, and they could be in a position where they could just find themselves at the property but then a few months later find themselves out in their ear again. I think the whole question of the extent to which these bits of legislation look real is in severe doubt, and the question therefore of whether putting those tenancies into a position where they are, yes, on a perhaps a probationary period, but also on a 3-year basis, assuming the tenant hasn't done anything terrible in the meantime of the probation period, is, I think, a real prospect of getting change on, but something I think that does underpin not just the question of the tenant's right to repair, but also the extent to which there is a real prospect of making these changes stick in the long term as far as local authority relations with landlords are concerned. And I think just a final note, I am very much in favour of landlord registration. Again, I think there may be a prospect of returning to the idea of a national landlord register over the next period. But I would just caution, of course, that the question of a landlord register, again, as we've seen on the slide, relates, yes, yet again, to pieces of secondary legislation, in this instance to the Housing Act 2005, and a definition of what an HMO is and how many people are in it, how many floors are in it, and the extent to which you can then go beyond that and redline particular areas and state that that area is an area of high HMO stress, and you gain what is called an Article 4 direction in order to to license landlords of properties that don't exactly fit that particular category. But I just leave you with that thought in terms of the fact that in order to do that, you have to have probably a small department of the local authority dedicated to trawling through the bits of secondary legislation that make that work. All I can say is good luck as far as doing that is concerned. But I do think that as far as getting to grips with how this whole area works, particularly the relationship of tenancies of less than whole houses and tenancies of whole houses, then this report, I think, produces some very clear ways forward. And it does indeed need, I think, on the back of those clear ways forward, for you to talk to your members of Parliament in your areas to say, get stuck into those bits of secondary legislation to make it work, and ring up the bloke who talked out the bits of legislation that might have worked and tell him not to do it again.
Thank you very much.